When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Zero by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs in honor of Draymond Green's 0 points. And Draymond Green's 0 assists, and Draymond Green's 0 rebounds, and Steph Curry's 0 field goals.
That's a lot of zeros. Chris Harrington has written a piece over at the Daily Memphian, and I would urge you to read it, about last night's festivities at FedEx Forum, in which you wrote that Draymond Green just played the worst game of all time.
I think it may have been the worst game of basketball ever played by a person in the world. Yeah.
What's the evidence that it is the worst game ever played in the world, in the history of the world?
So the individual futility is the 0-0-0 in real time, 19 minutes of play, 0-0-0. He has never personally had a triple zero in as many minutes, him personally. Mm-hmm. The negative 42 is pretty bad. It's not the worst ever. There are, I think, I remember like 80-something. 82 players in NBA history have been worse than negative 42 in the plus-minus. But no one has ever paired the triple zero with a negative 42 before. The previous record for worst plus-minus for a triple zero game was Walter McCarty for the Boston Celtics in 2002, was negative 40 with a triple zero.
A triple zero and the worst. Yes, that's absolutely. It's pretty clear the worst game of all time. Plus, I don't know who pointed out, someone on Twitter, there were wonderful stats flying all over the place. It is the worst by a player who has played fewer than 20 minutes. So he was also bad very efficiently as well. He was hideous very efficiently as well. Obviously, much was made, maybe too much was made, of Draymond and the comments and all of that. But it did feel like, and the Grizzlies downplayed it afterwards, but it did feel like they were irked by his comments. Don't you believe?
Sure they were. They used that for motivation. The thing about getting riled up or whatever about Draymond Green comments, Draymond Green is desperate for attention. And so you're giving him what he wants. Because he just wants attention all the time. He can't stop himself. And I mean, the joke I make in the column is that at this point, you would think that Draymond Green talking would sound like the parents in a Peanuts cartoon. It would just be, like you wouldn't really hear it anymore. Because he just never stops. He's always talking. You see someone talking right now.
You posit that the Ja Morant block, he has had greater blocks, but maybe no block more satisfying. In fact, that sequence from beginning to end, pretty spectacular from the Grizzlies' perspective.
That's the sequence of the season. Usually it's like some fast break, some block that leads to a fast break with an alley-oop. That's usually my sequence of the season. Uh-huh. But that might be my sequence of the season. Blocking Draymond Green And then Draymond Green being so mad about it, he looks for someone to bully, and he finds Zach Edey, and that does not work out for him. And so, like, that may be my secret to the season.
I like the word you chose. Zach Edey almost seemed bemused by Draymond Green.
I thought that was the look. It showed, that's not on like the clip. I can find, but watching the game live, at one point they showed like the close up.
Yeah.
And it looked like Zach Edey was just sort of smirking at Draymond Green, like, whatever, dude. and Santiago Dallas was literally just standing there laughing in his face.
Oh, it was a beautiful thing. Okay. So what does it mean, Chris? What does it mean? Does this, games like this have any significance?
Beyond, I mean, it's one game. I'm not that big on what is the meaning of this game, but I do think the Grizzlies, if you put this in the context of the season, I think what you see is that this, the way the Grizzlies play, like, again, I'm not saying they're the best team in the league. They're not. I'm not saying they're most likely to come out of the West. There's real questions about once you get into the sort of crucible playoff basketball or whatever. But over the course of the regular season, the way they play, the way they apply their depth to their pace and their style and the chemistry they bring to it, it's a machine that hums, and when it really gets humming, it can rack up big scores. And even when they're off, like, they still sort of stick around. Like, they blow out teams a lot, they don't get blown out, you know? And I sort of started a column by looking at the last two Grizzlies games where the Grizzlies go to Los Angeles, so they just don't have it. The whole team is a mess from the tip. And, like, they lose by six at the end. And then you come to this game, and the Warriors don't have it. The whole team's a mess from the tip, and they lose by 51. And there's something about this Grizzlies team. Like, not only do they have, not only was that the biggest win from a point differential standpoint in the NBA this season, they broke their own. They already had it. It was by 45 at Portland. Now they have the two biggest. And they just have a lot of big wins and not a lot of big losses. And I think partly that's the style of play and, like, how good they are with that style.
Obviously, a little damper on it when Ja went down. He was laughing and smiling at the end. And so, you know, I don't know. Like, it is interesting, as you pointed out. It's not so much even the dunking. It's the high. It's careening into the lane 6 feet in the air or whatever it is. And that's where we saw the injury, you know?
Yeah, and it looked like, it's unclear whether, right, someone asked me on Blue Sky about, you know, was it the hip or was it the back? And, like, these things are sort of connected to each other, you know? And so, like, he got bumped on the hip in the air, and then he landed on the back. And it looked to me like the bump may have been a bigger thing than the landing, but they're kind of the same thing.
Right.
I mean, if he had already had the hip injury, I think it would be less concerning. But it seems like something that would re-aggravate, or at least from a soreness standpoint, if nothing else, right, it would be relevant. And so, I don't know. I mean, the fact that he was questionable, and, like, you know, he was apparently going to shoot the free throws if they had lost the challenge, you know, I doubt it's some major thing, but it's not going to shock me if he misses some time.
Right.
It, like, if at least, like, you know, 2 days from now he's not playing the way he looked.
And it gets to your central truth about this team from the beginning of the season, which is if Ja, Jaren, and Dez are healthy, they're good. They're very good.
Yeah.
But
there's real durability. There is over the last two seasons, and Jaren has gone the other way.
Isn't it weird? Like, Jaren was the one who was the question for the longest time.
Right.
And now he's always there, it appears. Knock on whatever.
No, it's Morant and Bane. Like, the durability questions and concerns have really built with those guys over the last two or three seasons.
All right, so then the other interesting thing that happened was Zach Edey was elevated back into the starting lineup. What did you make of that?
Drew and I talked about this on the pod a few days ago about whether that should happen, and I was sort of agnostic about it. I was fine. I was fine either way on that one. I don't think it's a big deal. I think he needs to play a lot. I think you watched that game, like, he was good because everybody was good, but there was one specific manner in which he was not good at all. And that was when he got the ball in the paint, he would bring the ball down a little bit, and they would just swarm on him. I think he had four turnovers that way. It was kind of a mess. He's just got to get better at that. He's got to get better at keeping the ball high. He's got to get better at being stronger with the ball and anticipating that better. He just needs more time. He hasn't actually played that much. I think the question of starting him, I wrote a little bit about this as a secondary item today. I just sort of did a little grid where I showed the results so far of all the different front court combinations. And one thing that jumps out of that is something I think I've talked about on this show before, where everyone says, you know, Jaren and Brandon works great, which is true, but Jaren and Zach Edey have actually been better this season, numbers-wise. But I don't think that's the main thing. I think the main thing is flip it the other way, and you look at what works without Jaren. And Zach Edey and Jaren have worked really well, but they won't play Zach Edey with Brandon Clark or Jay Huff. They basically haven't done that. And so the Zach Edey, Santi Aldama stuff has been good on offense but bad on defense. So it works out to a net positive, but only like a small one, which sort of makes sense when you think about that combination. It'd be good on offense and bad on defense. And so there's this question of, like, what do you do with Zach Edey when Jaren's not on the floor? I think that's a little bit of a problem for the team. Well, that becomes less of a problem when you play him with Jaren more. If he starts with Jaren, then you minimize the amount of minutes over the course of the game you're trying to play Zach Edey without Jaren.
So
and Brandon Clark is good with Santi Aldama and good with Jay Huff and good with whatever. You know?
In non-Jaren minutes, what's been the best front court combination?
Oh, I don't have all that in front of me, but like, a lot of it's been good. Santi Aldama and Brandon Clark has been good. That's probably been the best one without Jaren, not surprisingly. The Santi Jay Huff stuff has been really good. The Huff Clark has been great, but it's just too small of a sample. I don't really put a lot of stock in that. But their best combinations without Jaren have been Santi Brandon and Santi Huff.
But that's interesting. So if you play Edey with Jaren and start him, what that does, because as you phrased it, it's not that Edey and Jaren are better than Brandon and Jaren. It's that Edey needs Jaren more. And so by starting him, you get him with the Jaren minutes.
Yeah, and you can still close games with Jaren and Brandon or Jaren and Santi and just see how the game flows, right? I think the game flow over 48 minutes is probably going to be better that way.
Fascinating. And so you think they did this and will continue to do this going forward? You think this was a move?
I don't know. They've made noises about being situational with that. They haven't embraced that, but they sort of made noises about it. And it makes sense. Brandon Clark and Zach Edey so different from each other that you would sort of adjust the matchups on that. That is something I used to advocate like back in the day when with Tony Allen. Like, start him in the games where you need that defense more. And, you know, and like, I even had some, like Jason Levine and I actually talked about this once. And Jason Levine would say, I agree with you, but coaches won't really go for this. And players want to know what their role is, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I don't know whether they'll do that and actually really just game-to-game decision with it. But, like, it wouldn't be a crazy thing to do.
Also in the column, people can read it, the Daily Memphian. Chris has written about last night's festivities and then the and some thoughts about other matters. One is Santi Aldama was terrific last night, and it had begun to occur to you he could be a Sixth Man of the Year candidate.
Well, somebody asked me about that a few weeks ago, he wasn't really like on my list, my mental list or whatever of players who for that, and that has jumped out to me. And that's because he had started so many games. I think at one point this season, he had started like more than half the games he had played when that question first started popping up. And if you start more than half your games, you can't be Sixth Man of the Year. Well, now he's settled into the bench role and he really is playing as the Sixth Man. And in that role, he probably hasn't been the best player in the league in that role. That's probably been Peyton Pritchard, who may just run away with that. But Santi, I think, legitimately has been among the better players in the league in that role.
And then in terms of the Warriors' perspective, obviously it's one game, you flush it, right, as they say. But
they're 4-12, I think,
exactly.
In the last 16, something
that's
like that.
It's one game, but it's not – it is a what do you make of what's happened with the Warriors?
I think they were over their heads early this season, and I think I should have recognized that instead of like being, oh, well, the Warriors are doing it again.
Right.
I think the truth of that roster, even though they got off to a good start, what that roster looked like before the season is still what that roster looks like. And that's, they've got one all-NBA guy and no one else who's even remotely close to that, even remotely. Like, you know, no one else who's even remotely an all-star anymore. And that's just, it's hard to win big with that kind of roster, as great as Steph Curry is. And so, they've got Steph Curry, and they have depth, and they're well-coached, and blah, blah, blah. But, like, the roster's just not that good. And I think that's sort of – I think they'll turn it around and be better than, like, you know, they won't play at a 4-12 rate the rest of the way. But I don't think they could have suddenly become a 10-2 rate team either, you know.
So if you are a which fan base is more distraught today or more irritated or disturbed by the results of last night? The Golden State fan base or the Minnesota fan base, which loses, they lose 133-107 in the Cat return game, and he goes for 32-20.
Yeah, you know, I don't listen to Minnesota sports talk radio. I'm strictly a Memphis guy as far as that goes, so I don't know what they're talking about here this morning.
Uh-huh.
But it was funny, last night on social media, Chris Hine, who's the beat writer for the Star Tribune, the last thing I saw him tweet, or I don't know whether it was Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever, but the last thing I saw him post was like telling all of his followers to just turn off Twitter and go to bed. everyone calm down. So I think there's a lot of, for one thing, that game happened at home for them, right, not on the road. And, like, yeah, Grizzlies-Warriors is a rivalry game that people anticipate, but that was Cat's first time back in Minnesota in a Knicks uniform. They made that trade. This is a team that was in the Western Conference Finals last year. They made that trade. They've been far worse this year. And then they just get absolutely smoked in their gym with him going off. That was a rough scene.
That is a rough scene. Do we think we can now say it was a mistake?
Yeah, but the main driver of it was money.
Yeah,
there was a reason to think that it would work basketball wise. But the fundamental truth was always, if it weren't for the tax reasons, it would not have happened. And so it happened for the tax reasons. And it was, I think they say that saw an opportunity not to get better, but to stay as good while cleaning up their books. And they cleaned up their books, but they did not stay as good.
It was the Rudy Gay. I mean, it was bigger in some ways, but it was what the Grizzlies did, what they did with Rudy Gay, and I think actually did make them better. But the driver was, we have to get rid of Rudy Gay's salary. And here's a way to justify it. Here we can bring in Tayshaun Prince, and we can do this, and we'll be just as good.
Yeah, I think the Rudy thing was sort of it was more equally balanced in terms of the money reasons and the basketball reasons.
Right.
Like, they really believed in the basketball reasons. I can tell you that. The decision makers did, at least. The coach did not necessarily. Lionel didn't, but like the front office people did. This case was not that. I don't think they looked at. I think it was driven almost entirely by the luxury tax, and it was like, oh, this might work for us on the court too, but we got to take the opportunity to do this.
All right, Chris, well, we're on next Monday, but after that, we are no longer, we're taking a break for the holidays. So, talked earlier about you having seen a complete unknown, and you were going to tell us at some later date what you thought. Is today that day?
That's up to you. It's a Jeff Hawkins show.
What do you think? What do you think? How was it?
I really like a complete unknown. I'm going to have my year-end movie list. I think this, I've already written it. I think this weekend they're going to publish it. And there are a bunch of movies opening on Christmas Day, but that's the one, maybe the only one, that will be on my top 10 is A Complete Unknown. And this is the one movie where I sort of had to separate, like, how good I think it is from how much I enjoyed it. Cause, like, I know and care an awful lot about the subject here.
Right.
Which could lead me to, like, be more picky about it. In this case, it doesn't. I think it's really good. I mean, I could be here all day, which you don't have time for. It's interesting to me. You can tell from the trailers the movie was going to do two things. It was going to be about Bob Dylan, the artist, the kid who shows up in New York, lands in the middle of this folk scene and sort of blows it up and then leaves. And it was going to be sort of this, like, romantic triangle, him and Joan Baez and the other girlfriend character whose name they changed. And I thought it was going to lean more into the romantic stuff because that is more generalized and thus, you know, easier for film goers who are not necessarily big Bob Dylan fans, you know? And it doesn't really do that. It focuses more on the music and on the art. And one of the things that it does that I think is great is that it doesn't try to explain the art and where it came from. It's not one of these, his childhood trauma explains his art or where he came from. The whole point of it, and which at one point is close to articulated, which is core to, like, the Bob Dylan ethos, is that he invented it all. Bob Dylan doesn't even exist. Bob Dylan is the fictional creation of Robert Zimmerman. It's the idea is that you create yourself. You don't find yourself, you create yourself. And it really conveys that really well, and the music stuff is done really well. It leans hard into the songs, and there's like a dozen themes of, like, people watching Bob Dylan sing a song for the first time, and they look on with a mixture of awe and resentment. And that could get old after a while. Mm-hmm. They could have done that 12 more times, and they all would have worked for me, because the songs are that good.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
We'll talk to Chris again on Monday. You can read his piece on Draymond Green playing. That was satisfying, wasn't it?
Yeah, I almost thought about stepping in.
The worst game of all time.
Well, I thought about stepping in. When y'all started veering off the path,
you wanted to.
We needed to get back to the main thing.
And there have been worse efforts.
Not many.
In terms of plus minus. There have been quite a number, but never a worse triple zero effort on plus minus than what Draymond Green submitted last night. That's
good thing he's only making, $100 million.
Spectacular. If you want to make someone really happy this weekend, get to Robert Irwin Jewelers, where they have spent, it's been nearly five decades now. There are jewelers that come and jewelers that go and whatever, they promise all kinds of things. They came down here from New York 46, 47 years ago and said, you know what, let's make a business here. Let's make a business and a life and a community here. And that's what they do. So whether you're celebrating, and by the way, it was pointed out to me, Hanukkah and Christmas, same day this time. Like Christmas Eve, Hanukkah, whatever, same day this time. So,
Christmas Day and the first day of Hanukkah are the same day.
Yeah, same day. So whether it's Christmas you're celebrating, Hanukkah you're celebrating, whether it is getting engaged, and that's a beautiful thing, get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers, where they're passionate about diamonds. And you can tell, because among other things, they've got the meant-to-be guarantee, whereby if you walk in there and get your custom-made, stunning, beautiful engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it, no questions asked. The point isn't that you will, because you won't. Jeffy, let me ask you, has Aaliyah returned her stunning engagement ring?
No, the only thing we've done is add to it.
The only thing they've done is add to it. But it's comforting to know, I suppose, that you could. What it really bespeaks is the confidence that you have and the confidence in the experience that you have. I go to the one right across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. When we return, we have the historic college football playoffs are upon us tonight. Indiana University, Notre Dame, and then three more games tomorrow. Jeffrey will pick them all, and he'll throw in a few bowl games just as an extra bonus. We'll do that next. It is the Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, where we don't miss a chance to play the second best fight song in the land. This is all new, Jeffrey. We didn't do Jeffrey's bets when it was just meaningless random bowl games. But now that we have a 12-team playoff, this is going to be fun.
When is the last Notre Dame home game that wasn't played on NBC?
There's a question.
It's got to be like the 90s.
And interestingly, like you got the SMU game, Penn State game, that's going to be on TNT.
Indeed.
On TNT. It's going to have...
And Max.
It's produced by ESPN with Correct. ESPN licensed, broadcasters, basically. But will be on TNT. So, all right, here we go, Jeffrey. What do you want to start with tonight, obviously?
Jeff, consider me daunted.
Daunted? I always thought of you as undaunted.
So, not really. You know why?
Why? What daunts you?
I have eyeballs.
Oh.
Indiana's not that good. Notre Dame is good.
Like, I have some mixed feelings here because I know...
They have earned the right to be here.
We have some Notre Dame listeners. No, but I have mixed feelings about all of this because We have loyal Notre Dame listeners, one of whom has actually helped me get out of a traffic ticket before.
Respect.
So, I have a warm spot in my heart for Notre Dame and the Golden Domers. Pete Pranica is another one. Like he's another Notre Dame guy, right? So but my normal approach to sports is
root for the underdog.
Root for the underdog, particularly, and then root for the people who are being scorned. Like, for example, when the Detroit Lions, and I brought it up a million times now, when they are mocked for picking a running back and a linebacker in the first
round.
How
do you like them now? They would not have a running back if they had not taken Jahmyr Gibbs.
I wanted to turn out for them. So right now, all the skeptics hate Indiana, say they're a fraud, they shouldn't have been here, they're not very good, whatever. I kind of want Indiana.
That's fine, Jeff. Do you know what their record is playing against teams that have a winning record?
No.
They are 1-1. They're 0-2 against the spread. They should have lost to Michigan. Meanwhile, Notre Dame this year, 6-0 against teams with a winning record.
To Michigan. You know who did lose to Michigan? Ohio State.
More on them in a little bit.
What?
More on them in a little bit.
A little bit. All right, so meanwhile, what?
Meanwhile, Notre Dame 6-0 against teams with a winning record this year, including 5-1
against
the spread.
Who was better against teams with a losing record, Jeffrey?
Well, none of these teams have losing records anymore. Indiana, there's something about Cignetti.
Line 7?
6.5.
6.5.
I think Cignetti's a front runner. If you look at him, like,
Google him.
If you look at, Marcus Freeman had to.
Yeah. all right. So you're going to go ahead and lay the points.
I will lay the 6.5. I'm also perhaps laying 14.5 with a plus sign.
Notre Dame -6.5 over Indiana. All right.
All right, Jeff, let's go to tomorrow on TNT, 11 a.m.
What's your line for this one? 8.5?
Right now, SMU catching 8.5 at Penn State. I believe the 12-team playoff is designed to keep James Franklin and Penn State miserable together in perpetuity.
Who's the better quarterback in this matchup?
I don't have the Drew Aller gene.
No, you never have.
Yes.
And Kevin Jennings is a baller.
Correct. But if you can keep Kevin Jennings in the pocket, it gets a little dicey. Now, he's a special talent, and we saw, like, Clemson was able to keep him in the pocket for a half, but not for a second half. I just really think this is the classic James Franklin perfect, quote-unquote, big game
him.
To win.
This is
it's
so
It's SMU.
Miserable.
It's not Michigan. SMU's not good up front.
Oh, so you
I'm
think,
laying the 8.5.
I see.
Because James Franklin in a big game only counts if it's Michigan or like, Ohio
this
State.
Like, this is like, this will not satisfy
anyone. It doesn't prove anything.
If they win this game,
it's a perfect James Franklin win.
And then lose.
Perfect James Franklin win.
It won't, in fact, satisfy. Just like for Memphis fans, winning a bowl game or like beating Iowa State.
Or beating beating West Virginia when they had players sitting out in the second half.
Or beating Tulane after it doesn't matter.
Correct. Nobody's happy.
So this is going to be that. It's certainly better than losing.
Correct.
But it's not going to satisfy people.
Yep.
So you're going to, for these very complicated emotional reasons,
yes,
say that you're going to go ahead and lay the 8.5 and take Penn State over SMU. I'll ask you this later. Unless, because we'll get to the rest. Go ahead. Next.
Jeff, we go to Austin, Texas.
Yeah, we do.
The Texas Longhorns laying 12.5 against Clemson. The Longhorns.
Speaking of, by the way, you were earlier disparaging Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
You know who hasn't beaten anybody?
That would be Clemson.
Texas hasn't. Texas has beaten who?
Neither is Clemson. Texas's best win is A&M.
Florida and A&M.
Florida's not. They were playing Florida with a walk-on quarterback.
Well, that's true.
No.
On paper.
No, their best wins are...
So they've beaten nobody. And
correct.
Quinn Ewers is banged up.
Correct. I'm taking the 12.5.
They both stink.
I'm taking the
12.5.
Texas is 2-4 as double-digit favorites against Power 4 teams this year. Their covers were against Florida, as we mentioned, with the walk-on quarterback. And I swear to God, Jeff, if Florida would have run the ball every single play, they would have covered. Instead, they tried to have the kid throw, and he's god-awful. And also, Oklahoma.
So you don't like either of these teams?
No, I don't like either of these teams. I'm going to take 12 points.
Of the six teams we have discussed so far,
yeah,
Indiana, Notre Dame, SMU, Penn State,
I should qualify.
Clemson,
Texas. Like Texas's defense. I think
Texas is the only team you like. You like Notre Dame, actually, right?
Yes, I think Notre Dame's very good.
Is Notre Dame the best of the six teams we've discussed, or is Penn State? Who's
Notre
the best?
Dame. I would take Notre Dame over Penn State every day. I don't like Notre Dame if they get into a game with, like, Oregon.
With an elite team.
Yes, but as long as they're playing this crop of teams, I think Notre Dame is, like, Notre Dame's the best version of what they can be.
And that's what's interesting to the point you made earlier. They picked the right teams, given the way they picked the teams.
Yes.
But if Alabama were playing, let me ask you this. Alabama were playing Indiana, Notre Dame, SMU, Penn State, Clemson, and Texas. Straight up, who would you pick Alabama to beat? Which of those teams would you pick Alabama to beat?
All except Notre Dame and Texas.
All right, so you're going to take the 12.5, Clemson plus 12.5 over Texas. And then the one that is of most interest to our...
The actual good game.
It's a great game. And by the way, this notion, which you keep hearing, cold weather,
mm-hmm,
it is as if people think that Knoxville has palm trees.
So,
it's crazy the way people... Well,
Sparks,
I'd like them if it was, you know, if it wasn't warm weather.
Someone's screenshot is going around. It is colder today in Knoxville than it is in Columbus.
Yeah, it's just
I
ridiculous.
Think the cold weather thing applies, but not to Tennessee. It applies to, like, LSU, to Florida.
Yes, 100%. Like, it doesn't apply to Knoxville.
By the way, I bet there's just as many Southern kids on Ohio State's roster as there is Tennessee's. They all recruit the same places.
I think that's right. The whole thing's ridiculous. That part is absolutely ridiculous.
Jeff,
right,
I have accepted my fate. I am destined to get this game wrong. One way or the other,
really?
I would 100% get
fade,
this game wrong.
All right, people, fade whatever you do here. Fade Jeffrey. Why are you
so if I'm
persuaded?
Destined to get it wrong, give me the points. Give me Tennessee 7.5. Here's why I actually like the Vols. Will Howard's a coward. He's not a big game player. He is a classic tight booty hole guy. This goes back well before Ohio State. He would do this at Kansas State. Kansas State people are nodding their heads in agreement. When the moment gets tough, he freaks out. I do not see how Ohio State fixed their offensive line in 2 weeks. Tennessee's defensive line is going to eat, and yes, there is an opportunity for Ohio State's unbelievable receiver room to take advantage of Tennessee's secondary. We've only seen one team do that this entire year, and I am not betting on Will Howard to be the second, because Carson Beck, actually good, was able to carve up Tennessee in the second half when he played probably the game of his career, at least the second half of his career, against Tennessee. That ain't Will Howard. Give me the 7.5.
I do think what's interesting is I 100% would take Tennessee and the 7.5. The key, of course, being the 7.5, because I think it's going to be, what's the over under?
I think 46.5. Let me double check.
Because in the end, like the Tennessee defensive line, the Ohio State offensive line is a mess.
So it's bouncing between 46 and 46.5.
Is going to dominate. Like, the Tennessee defensive line is...
Well, there are defensive scores, too. Never forget. I mean, Will Howard, that's the part of the Michigan story, is Will Howard gave him the ball to two.
Tennessee allows 0.82 yards before contact rushing attempts, which is the best in the country. Tennessee on defense, touchdowns in the red zone.
I trust Josh Heupel more than I trust Ryan Day.
But here's the thing. I don't think Tennessee's going to move the ball particularly well either.
I'm not asking them to.
So it really, to me, does come down to, and it's an interesting, because we started out with, does this Tennessee, way back when the season began, we were like, does this Tennessee team, is it limited by the fact that they got this first-year starter at quarterback, right?
Absolutely.
But in the end, who do you trust? Which of these quarterbacks do you trust more? And the amazing thing is it may well be Nico and not Will Howard. You are a Will Howard skeptic and have been for the moment he
transferred. I never understood this. Why are you spending that much money on your roster and handing it to Will Howard? Tyler Springs writes in, this is the first Notre Dame home game since November 17th, 1990 that will be not on NBC.
All right, so here's the other question, Jeffrey. If you're going to pick a underdog that's actually going to win a game.
Tennessee.
It's Tennessee.
Yes.
Clearly.
Yeah. I'm asking Clemson just to keep it close.
I think that's right.
I don't really trust Texas's offense.
Do you believe, if you had to just pick it outright, you don't, would you pick Ohio State if you didn't get the 7.5?
I think I'd pick Tennessee.
You'd pick them straight up.
Because I also think it's going to be a weird environment. If Ohio State comes out and
it's going to get ugly fast. That's the old. People are like, what's the vibe up there?
Like, they're ready to pounce. They don't like their coach.
Does Tennessee plant a flag if they win?
God, I hope so. Now, I would actually argue don't do it because you're in a playoff.
Oh, yeah. You don't plant a flag in
next,
the playoff.
Next
I think
game.
That's right. You make a good point. You're going to give us some others?
So, here's the question. Would you rather do it Monday? As we head into...
Sure.
Because we also have... These are basically the games. We have two games today, but the line in Florida Tulane moved too much. I wanted Tulane at 14. I don't love them at 10. And Ohio versus Jacksonville State... I lean Ohio, but Mac and bowl games, I can't do it. The Mac and bowl game's not good.
All right, so to sum up, ladies and gentlemen, Notre Dame -6.5 over Indiana, Penn State -8.5 over SMU, Clemson +12.5 over Texas, and Tennessee +7.5 over
Ohio. I do want to give out one stat. This will be a preview for Monday. Jeff, I miss Mike Leach almost every single day. From time to time, I'll find myself thinking of him. But one of his greatest legacies was he did not care about bowl games at all. And I found this up. I found this 2 days ago when I was doing Neil's picks column. He has 16 former players who've gone on to become head coaches, and only two of them have winning bowl records. The greatest legacy that all of them honor the man every single year when it comes to bowl games.
Beautiful
by
thing.
Never having a winning record. So thank you.
By the way, are we taking a break before the?
Yeah, we can.
We all right. We're back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. NFL playoffs almost here. Not too late to get in on the regular season action with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers finish the season strong with $250 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. Then you can bet on a whole bunch of stuff, which players are going to score a touchdown, how many points each team will score, and so much more. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to join today. And again, new users with a win a $5 bet, you get $250 in bonus bets. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issues, non-withdrawal bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. Once again, we got Tigers tomorrow, 11:30,
yep.
FedEx Forum, massive game for them. There were more things, Jeffrey, from last night that I wanted to remember. I like the moment when Ja Morant signals first team defense to Tony Allen.
Yeah,
like you had all the. It was this great. It was Z-Bo was there, T.A. was there, Mike Miller was there.
Allegedly, the Warriors were.
The Warriors were so not there. Mm-hmm. They were only there to accept the humiliation.
Correct. Take that beating.
It was just a beautiful thing. All right, what's coming up
next? Did
Draymond
run a podcast last night?
I think Draymond probably didn't do a podcast last night, oddly.
No way.
Oddly enough. And, it was delicious. And hopefully this weekend will be just as much fun. We will be back Monday. Special edition of Fish on Friday, on Tuesday,
on Monday.
And then we'll get out of here for a little bit. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Anthony Sane joins them today. Blake Topmeyer will join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Tim Murray, of course, will be with me as well. Cobb will be with Connor at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday for Now Work is Done.